I followed the theme of inheritance, so I'm reading poems that some of you have already heard before, at least you, Jim, have heard them before. I'll start with Lennon's. Is this working now? Plain weaves, twills and herringbones, woven at home, linen on linen, linen on cotton. Some are still uncut, a band of warp threads separating one napkin, one towel from the other. But most are decorated with needlepoint lace. My mother's older sister had the broad back and strong constitution to bend for hours, working the pedals, arms stretching to send the shuttle scuttling through. My mother, the more delicate one, the one who wanted to get away, sat where the light fell on her hands and pulling out the weft threads her sister had worked into a tight fabric, restructured the space with floss, white on white open work borders, arabesqued windows. Rough or fine textured, the linen I was saving were meant to survive soaking in hot water and ashes, milling on the rocks. I machine wash them, and when the weather is good, hang them outside, the way women still do over there, stretching them into shape while damp. Most are holding up well. A few show signs of wear, but not from use. It was keeping them safe in a trunk for so many years that weakened the fabric. The bricklayers. The bricklayers repaving the street near my house talk Italian as they work, a southern dialect. They're Abruzzesi, descendants of an ancient people who made roads and aqueducts for the Romans and paths that others would follow. I was a stonemason back home, the boss tells me, and I know that like my mother's father, he built houses for a living. He gives orders in Italian and a young man answers in English. Their fathers and sons, in-laws and paisani. In the space they've opened between the curbs, they measure carefully from the middle to the edge, from the edge to the middle, matching new bricks with the old, blending the colors to look good. I was thinking of my father when I wrote this poem, who was a master cabinet maker. The apprentice. Ars longa vita brevis, they said, and meant it. At 10, maybe 9, he started to learn his art. In the dust and wood shavings, he fetched and swept and kept out of the way and learned to be of use, holding steady his end of a plank, turning the honing stone, mixing in an eggshell the stinking glue. The master, distant and ever present, the boy watched and listened, honored and obeyed, the lessons meant for others, his as well, the smooth and straight, the rough and knurled. It took years for the sap fresh tissues to dry into heartwood. A patient wait, watching the older pupils cut, plane, miter, and join, the idea takes shape from eye to eye, from hand to hand. Desire sharpened into a tool as fingers thrilled on the glowing smoothness, bent to fashion. Years, years of touching, of jobs tentatively, expertly done before he's the one, the learner become master. The master who joins his will, the vision of his inward eye to a block of wood, and the wood, once a living thing, begins to live again out of the mind of one into the hands of few, the eyes of many, a thing of beauty, true from the inside out, the pattern worked in the grain with a grain, no veneers, only the light, the finished surfaces catch and give back. The bread we ate, now wait a minute, there's one before this. I had it in the wrong place. The bread wreath, when my sons were little, they wanted Wonder Bread instead of Italian, afraid to be different. Then they discovered that anything Italian was good, fashionable. And now they're grown up. They ask about the past, that other country, familiar and strange. And sometimes I tell them, on Sundays my brother stopped by the bread works on the way over and bought us a colura to have with our dinner. Still warm from the oven, deliciously fragrant as only that kind of bread can be. As we broke it into pieces and passed it around the table, I told my children about the 7 wreaths of bread my mother gave to the poor on the anniversary of his death, to eat in remembrance of my father and of the 6 men who had died with him. The bread we ate did not have a name, neither did the wheat we took to the mill, the flour the fornara made into dough at the community oven. She used a starter from an earlier batch, an inheritance received and passed on like a blessing. Mothers hugged the round loaves to their breasts and cut towards them. We kissed it to show respect as we kissed our parents' hands in the morning, our fingers when crossing ourselves. Bread like prayer. The poor are always with us, someone said, even without the war, the after war, of one kind or another, or both. An old woman tried to open my neighbor's door with her house key. She had tried several houses in the maze of streets, a pack of jeering children following from door to door. Go walk her home, my mother urged me, and I did, a room with broken stairs. Later, my father dead a year, I went back with a wreath of bread for the soul of my father. She took the bread and kissed it, manna from heaven, a sacred duty. Mushrooms, a strange efflorescence on the lawn where hidden roots and stumps lie below the surface. Was it the rain, the sun after rain, the red moon that caused such profusion? They glow in the morning in the silver blue of dusk, open and turn inside out in the bright midday sun, empty bowls held up to the sky, split around the edges like odd-shaped petals, smooth and rough, all covered with fragments of the universal veil. A few push up close to the ground without visible stipes. Bronze and gold fluted leaves, like coral of the woods, the color of regret. Edible agarics or poisonous amanitas. I wish I knew. There was never a season, a gathering place, our time together short. Dead in their 30s or scattered widely across two continents, my people took this and other kinds of knowledge with them when they went. I like to finish with this poem that's called Reading the Names. I used to walk until very recently in the Mount Lebanon Cemetery. I would take my 2 mile walk by going in there, and I discovered after a while that some of the features and events and things from the cemetery kept creeping into my poems. And this is one of many poems I've written with images from the cemetery. Reading the names. Plain or polished, gray, pink, or black, the markers on the graves are as different in size, taste, or ambition as the people who erected them. Still, they're all lined up on the level field like pieces on a chessboard, players in a game. Large groups turned in the same direction as if waiting for a summons, a call to action. They face their opponents who face them across a narrow lane, a number that never gets smaller, that grows closer together and more cosmopolitan with the years. A few at a time over a long time or just recently, new members have joined the oldest residents. Perfetti, Camizio, and Ciacciarelli, Zhao, Nguyen, and Gonzalez. No matter how strange to read, how difficult to pronounce, almost no one today changes his name to one or two Anglo-Saxon syllables. In 1976, several dozen Smiths went back to Kowalski. And I've heard announcers attempt a pure vowel, toss a singing octave, Chris Fuamata Mahafala, into the homogenizing American air.